I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Leanne Hamilton. Leanne is the business editor at The Enquirer and also Cincinnati.com. She oversees a team of reporters who report on the region's Fortune 500 companies, transportation issues, economic development, commercial and residential real estate. Let's talk about some of the biggest issues that you perceive impacting our region in this coming year.
Well, I think one of the main things that we can talk about is the continuing issue of the airport, which by far and away is one of the largest economic development issues facing our region, of supreme importance to the companies that do business here and the companies that we would like to attract. In fact, we just did an analysis with USA Today last November and found that of the 100 largest airports in the country, surprisingly, CVG has had the biggest loss in flights and seats since 2005, and at the same time, one of the highest rates of increase of fares. And actually, I said surprisingly, I don't think that probably is very surprising to people who've been covering this issue for some time. When you talk to the airport officials, they'll be the first to tell you that in many ways, there is good news to report coming out of the airport. Allegiant Air moves in February, bringing new low-cost flights. Frontier Airlines became the first low-cost airline to move in since the 1990s last spring. And since then, its flights to Denver have been nearly full almost every day.
There's also other air alternatives, though. I know I've actually ridden on the Ultimate Air Shuttle, which is really nice.
Yes, Ultimate Air Shuttle is out there, and Vacation Express is another new airline that's moving in.
I've read in the Enquirer some of the issues that's really hindering, and some of the airport boards, some of the issues facing those folks.
We've been following that very closely, as it's a matter of big importance to our readers. Certainly, there have been issues that some fear are becoming distractions from the main business of running a good, efficient airport. And among them is that the Kentucky auditor right now is conducting a special audit of the airport board and its travel expenses, which may be dubious. And then in return, the airport board has hired its own auditor to conduct an audit to defend itself. It's entertaining on one end and yet disconcerting on the other.
For those of us who live in Cincinnati, one of the big ways we go to the airport is across the Brent Spence Bridge. And what do you think is going to happen with that in the next year? Do you think we'll see significant progress towards replacing that?
Where that stands now is that the transportation departments in Ohio and Kentucky just last December were out with reports showing that tolls were likely the best way to pay for a replacement bridge. And this, of course, as you know, has been controversial for some time.
For some time, Leanne, I've been here for more years than I'm going to mention. And it's amazing to me, we were talking about the Brent Spence Bridge decades ago, and we're still having those very same conversations today.
Well, we are, except one thing that does change is that price tag keeps going up and up and up. And right now, we're talking about a bridge replacement that's anywhere from $2.6 billion to $3.3 billion.
Why do we have to wait for a catastrophe to occur to get a new bridge?
I can only begin to suggest that it's a big, expensive project that has ties in traditional ways of federal funding for bridges that are no longer viable, and two states involved in trying to get a project going.
We have been speaking with Leanne Hamilton. She is the business editor for The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Leanne Hamilton. Leanne is the business editor at the Cincinnati Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. She oversees a team of reporters who report on the largest companies in our region, as well as transportation issues, economic development, real estate development, and a host of other things that affect business and really affect us all in some way, shape, or form. And Leanne, one of the things that affects a lot of us, whether positively or negatively, are some of the big projects going on in this region that are under construction. And the one that's most notable to me, Dunnhumby's new headquarters, which is going up as we speak.
Well, Dunnhumby is one of the largest construction developments currently ongoing. Actually, 2014 is expected to be a really hot year for commercial real estate development in the region and in the country. Sources are telling us that when it's all said and done, Cincinnati is likely to be the second most in-demand market in the Midwest after Chicago. Just 10 of dozens of big projects that are going on around downtown Cincinnati and the northern suburbs and in northern Kentucky, just 10 of them are worth more than $1.4 billion. And they're at the forefront of pushing some of the commercial development in the region. Dunnhumby is one.
We have an organization, a group here in town referred to as the Port Authority. Maybe you can talk about that and even explain what role the Port Authority has and its mission here in our region.
Well, you're speaking about the Port of Greater Cincinnati Development Authority, which is a mouthful, commonly known as the Port. What I can tell you about this is that it was created 3 years ago to become the major economic development driver in the region. It was seen as a need to pull together the various different development aspects that were going on and provide one main pivotal point to do things like clean up blighted properties, old industrial sites, strip malls that have been abandoned, and turn them into livable neighborhoods that are attracting people and businesses. The Port Authority had pinned its hopes on the parking deal as being the substance of providing a strong revenue stream to provide the funds to do what they wanted to do. And now they're back at square one trying to figure out, okay, what can we do?
Let's talk about the casinos and what impact they're playing.
Well, the casinos, all four of them that were authorized by Ohio voters in 2009 have now come online. Cincinnati's was the last one last March. So we now have full-fledged casinos in Cincinnati, Columbus, Cleveland, and Toledo. Soon we will be bringing on another racino. We actually have the first one that opened up last December, Miami Gaming Valley. Miami Valley Gaming, excuse me, up in Warren County with 1,600 slot machines. It's called a racino, by the way, for those who don't know, because it's basically a combination racetrack and casino.
And the second one's going to be at the facility that's been known as River Downs?
Yes, and that one will be known as Belterra Park.
Leanne, before we go, I also want to mention that on Saturday, this coming Saturday, February the 8th, Tom and I will be hosting for Cincinnati.com a tax chat. So if any listeners would like to come online, they can go to Cincinnati.com at 9 o'clock. Be prepared with your tax questions, and we'll be happy to answer. Thank you so much, and thank the Enquirer for providing that service. We get so much positive feedback from that.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Let's talk about some ways people can improve their finances in 2014.
Well, a lot of people have broken their resolutions. Some people didn't have any resolutions, at least when it came to money. And not that that's the most important thing in the world, but it can be the most important if you don't have enough of it. What most people should do, and really everyone, is to create a money roadmap of how you're going to have money, how you're going to spend money, and how you're going to save more money to meet your long-term goals.
Think about what your biggest dreams are, what your goals are, as you mentioned, and then write them down. I think what happens is a lot of people just have these ideas in their mind. They anticipate how they're going to achieve them. They may even mentally have a roadmap. But until you write that down on paper, have something that you can physically look at, it's only an idea. Put some very specific action plans in place to help you achieve those goals.
Well, most people that have financial problems do so because of some unforeseen event, but there's always going to be an unforeseen event. So the key is to have enough savings that you can overcome that. And you can only do that if you have a financial roadmap.
And if you've already gotten yourself into a financial pickle, many people just tend to ignore the conversation. They just don't want to go there. They don't want to talk about it because they're effectively ashamed. So you really need to get your head out of the sand, take a look at where you stand, and move forward. You can't ignore the problem. You have to take the problem, take the bull by the horns, and take control of your financial life.
I think you have to prioritize your spending and your saving so that you can put yourself in the best financial position. And savings is very important. I mean, you can't spend, no matter what you make, the key is not to spend it all.
Yes, they say that wealth is not driven by what you make, it's what you keep. Regardless of what your earnings level are, you have to learn to save.
That being said, it's a lot easier to save if you earn more money. So whatever you're earning now, you got to figure out how you can earn more. Do you need more training, more education?
When a lot of people over the last few years were so concerned about losing their job, or they were willing to settle for a job that was under their pay scale, because of the lack of jobs or the perceived lack of jobs. So take a look at what you're earning now. Look at your skill sets. And as you mentioned, if you need to fine-tune those, improve those so you can make more money, make that a part of your New Year's resolutions and your goals.
Also look at the major expenses that you incur. For instance, insurance, which is like a black box to a lot of people. They don't really understand how they can save money with insurance. But you can. Look at your deductibles. Maybe you can afford a higher deductible, which should lower your premium on your car insurance or your home insurance.
And one of our major items that we talk about every day with our clients is taxes. How can you pay less in taxes? So take a look at that. Most people pay more than they have to, and you need to take a hard look at what your tax situation is. Many people try to save money by doing their own taxes, but yet they leave so much on the table. It may be worth your while, just like you have a doctor, it may be worth your while finding a tax professional that you can work with, one that can help you look at your overall situation, both for 2014 and beyond, so that you can develop some strategies to help you save taxes in the future. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, today I want to talk about IRAs. You know, as we still at the beginning of the year, a lot of people are thinking about whether or not they should contribute to an IRA for last year, for 2013, because you have up until April 15th of 2014 to make your 2013 contribution. And a question we frequently get is, what type of IRA should I contribute to?
And again, an IRA stands for Individual Retirement Account. And you're right, there are different types of IRAs that become very confusing to people who don't take the time to understand. And it is critical that you do understand what type of IRA that you can qualify for. Some generate a deduction, others do not. Often, it's not always in your best interest to choose the type of IRA that generates a current deduction. So it depends on your specific circumstances, your age, your earnings.
Yeah, and a lot of people aren't entitled to a deductible IRA. Generally speaking, if you're covered by a qualified retirement plan, for example, a 401k plan at your work, and you make a certain amount of income, you cannot make a deductible IRA contribution. In that case, your choices are either a non-deductible IRA or a Roth IRA if your income is low enough to do a Roth.
You may say, well, why would I want a non-deductible IRA? Well, because the earnings inside the plan do grow tax-deferred until you qualify to pull them out without a penalty. So it does make sense in many cases to contribute to a non-deductible IRA if you can't benefit from a current deduction.
Also, there is a strategy that some people use where they contribute to a non-deductible IRA because they make too much income for a Roth, and then they later convert the non-deductible IRA, which they have bases in to the extent of their contributions, to a Roth. But you have to be wary of that technique and look at all your IRA's value and your bases to see how much income you would have on the Roth conversion.
And just as a general statement, the younger you are, the more sense it makes sense to contribute to a Roth IRA. For example, young professionals, when they do not contribute to a Roth IRA, frankly, I think they're just leaving so much money on the table because those dollars in that Roth, even though you don't get a current deduction for it, you get to accrue, those dollars just grow tax-free if you can qualify until you are eligible to pull them out at retirement or an earlier date if that's a qualifying event for you.
If you're old and don't really need the money from your IRA, you could convert that to a Roth, which may cause a taxable event. If that Roth IRA is inherited by your heirs, when they pull money out, they will not have to pay tax on it. So you're leaving them a more valuable asset than just a normal IRA upon which they will have to pay tax as they withdraw.
Yeah, so a typical IRA, a traditional IRA that is inherited, effectively requires the beneficiaries to pay tax on that as they pull the money out. So again, to your point, if it makes sense, then a Roth IRA could be a huge gift for your beneficiaries. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Alicia Kintner. Alicia is the Chief Operating Officer of ArtsWave. And Alicia, you've been here in the area about a year. How do you like Cincinnati, and what do you think of our arts community?
I think Cincinnati's arts community is almost unparalleled. I am so excited to be getting to know the many arts assets here. I don't think people who are from here necessarily realize what an incredible array of arts organizations and activities there are here. Somebody said to me there are more festivals and activities in Cincinnati than there are weekends, and I think that's true.
Well, one of the reasons that we have so many arts is because we have such a successful Arts Wave campaign. It's one of the most successful donor campaigns in the country, isn't it?
It is. We are the oldest and largest United Arts Fund in the country. And I can tell you that as an outsider looking in, one of the things that was so impressive was the number of donors and citizen participants in this campaign for the arts. I really think that that is another very unique aspect of Greater Cincinnati.
Why do you think that folks here in our tri-state region are so supportive of the arts, especially given the fact that we aren't one of the largest metropolitan areas in the entire country, yet we have such huge support?
I think you have a long history of support for the arts, and that you're nice to credit ArtsWave as creating this ecosystem of arts, but it does trace back to the generosity of individuals here going back more than 100 years. And I think that it's sort of part of Cincinnati's DNA. I've been trying to figure out just what is it all about. There was a history, I understand, in the Cincinnati public schools where kids were actually encouraged to donate their pennies to buy art for the hallways of the schools. And that's kind of remarkable to me that even decades ago, you were encouraging kids to be philanthropists for the arts.
The Arts Wave campaign has recently kicked off. We're into it a couple weeks now. What's the goal?
The goal is big this year. It's $12 million. We raised $11.5 million last year, so it's a $500,000 increase. And last year's increase was $300,000. So this year is a big leap forward, and it's going to take every member of the community stepping up to help us reach this goal. We see that the arts assets here are among the top selling points for HR departments, for realtors, for others who are trying to entice conventions here, things like that. We at ArtsWave believe that the arts can contribute collectively to two major outcomes in our community: a more vibrant regional economy and more connected people, more connected communities. So the social benefits of the arts are really key too. In total, ArtsWave is funding over 100 arts and cultural organizations, and they include community centers in neighborhoods and galleries and arts groups that are lesser known but doing really important work, often in schools, community centers. We're very clear that financial performance and running a healthy organization fiscally and through governance is a really key part of the criteria. If you don't have a healthy arts organization, they aren't going to be around that long. So their longevity is important to us. But we use volunteer panelists who, over a period of years, get to know the organizations, and we have a very rigorous review process and a proposal process that asks organizations increasingly to be measuring the impact of the key activities that they do.
So if folks listening today would like to learn more about ArtsWave, about the campaign, how their business can participate, how can they find that information?
Well, the easiest way is to go to our website, theartswave.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Alicia Kintner. Alicia is the Chief Operating Officer of ArtsWave. And Alicia, I know the ArtsWave annual campaign is in full swing now. You've got a pretty lofty goal this year, $12 million, $500,000 more than last year. One of the things you do is engage companies to help their employees participate not only in the campaign, but in more awareness of the arts. What are some of the specific things you do?
Well, Tom, we're in about 300 companies doing workplace giving campaigns this spring. But as you noted, it's about more than raising dollars. It's also raising awareness for the many arts assets of this region and how employees and their families can get connected to what's going on. So we try to see ourselves as that kind of connection on a year-round basis. But during the workplace campaign for the arts, we bring in artists and entertainers and activities that can help employees find their inner creativity or encourage them to bring their kids' art in, and often we ask employees to get in the act themselves. This year, our community campaign chair is Melanie Healy of P&G, and she is challenging the community to Cincy Sings, a community-wide sing-off that will be held at the Aronoff in April.
You know, and it's so fun, isn't it, that so much opportunity for businesses to really help the arts and allow their employees to have fun.
Well, it is so important because the more satisfied an employee is with his workplace, the more likely he is to stay in the job. And so the arts and the Arts Wave campaign can over time help with that bigger corporate objective of employee retention.
One wonderful thing, you do many wonderful things, but one specific thing that you do that I really love is this weekend sampler that you do. And I know Macy's is a big supporter of that. We've had one already on February 8th, but we have two more coming up.
Yes, the next one is March 15th, and the third one is April 12th. These are free day-long events across the region. So multiple venues are hosting Macy's Arts Sampler events. In total, we have over 140 events at about 50 venues. And on March 15th, we're very excited, at Music Hall, there will be a joint concert with the Cincinnati Symphony, Cincinnati Opera, the Ballet, the May Festival, and Cincinnati Shakespeare also will be on stage. So that's a great joint concert in Over the Rhine, but there will be other things across the region on March 15th.
And again, these are free, right? So people can come and participate,
free.
See what they like, what they don't like as much.
That's right. The name says it all. It's a sampling of arts activities. It's a great way to introduce kids to the arts. And many of the programs are actually focused on kids, and they're all free. Easy way to find out is through our app, the Macy's Arts Sampler app, available in the iTunes Store or the Android Marketplace. And you can search by venue or by types of art for each day, or even by neighborhood. So it's a great way to find out what to do.
And if there is a business who hasn't historically had a campaign within their organization, maybe they'd like to try it this year, how do they contact you?
We would love for new businesses to get involved with this campaign, and they can give us a call or go to www.theartswave.org and find out more about how to connect their business and their employees to the Arts Wave campaign.
Alicia, thank you so much for being our guest and for everything you're doing in the community.
Thank you.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Amy Katz. Amy is the president of Daughters in Charge, which is a division of Baker & DeBall. Amy, Baker & DeBall is an executive coaching firm. You personally have gotten very involved with coaching women. So let's talk about Daughters in Charge. And how did you come up with the idea, and what is that all about?
I came up with the idea after a long interest in developing women as leaders. But I was asked to participate on a panel with the Gehring Center for Family and Private Businesses. And they asked me to talk about leadership, along with three women who were in their families' businesses and in leadership roles. And after that, they suggested they might want to form a group, a roundtable, for younger women who were not yet at the helm, but who were committed to working in their families' businesses, interested in learning from each other. So I was asked to be a moderator, and I spent the year and continue to work with them. And along the way, I realized that their particular career journey is quite unique. It's very different to have your mother or your father be your boss. It's very challenging when you have things you want to say that you know would improve the business, but you're a little hesitant because you don't know what the reaction will be from one of your parents.
Well, family businesses can be very challenging, I think, and the more family members that are involved, usually the more challenging. But is it even more challenging if you're a female versus a male?
Well, in part, it depends on the business, but I would say they do have unique challenges. So, for example, many women join manufacturing businesses. There are many male-dominated industries, and so to have a young woman join that business and be a manager or a leader is a bit disruptive to the employees. It defies their expectations, and it takes a while for the young women also to be comfortable managing their authority.
But I would have to believe they bring a completely different dynamic, a different leadership style. What are you finding, Amy, as you deal with these folks? Are you seeing that these younger women who are leading differently than their fathers, how's the impact been on the business?
Well, one of the interesting things that I've learned as I've gotten to know these women is that historically, women in family-owned businesses have been referred to as CEOs, as chief emotional officers. And while that's well and good that often women pay attention to relationships in a different way and try and cultivate a culture that is more family-oriented, more supportive, and really focused on relationships, the women I'm working with now take the business side of their work quite seriously. So they really are learning about finances, learning about how to market, and really thinking very carefully about how to position their businesses for the future. So their leadership styles vary, just as leadership styles among men vary. But I do think there's been a shift now from looking only at the relationships to really looking at the whole business and how it's succeeding in the marketplace.
So what do you hope to accomplish with Daughters in Charge?
What we want to do, and with Daughters in Charge, is to really have an impact on daughters globally. We really want to create opportunities for them to learn from each other. We want to provide training in a number of areas, career development, finances, relationships, and leadership itself.
So if someone listening would like to learn more about the Daughters in Charge program, what's your contact information?
We have a website, www.daughtersincharge.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Amy Katz. Amy is the president of Daughters in Charge, which is a division of Baker & DeBall, an executive coaching firm. Daughters in Charge has a little different twist than the typical coaching business. Maybe you can tell us what led you to start this business.
Well, apart from my interest in daughters and family businesses, I was interested in creating a business which was online, which would be able to reach young women the way that they live. And they live through their phones now. They live through their laptops. They listen in to gain information while they're working out. So these are the ways that many experts now are using online businesses in order to reach a wider public. The way our business works is actually quite different than a face-to-face coaching engagement with someone. There's blogs, there's going to be podcasts. We are creating an online community and want to have ongoing conversations with the people who decide to join us. And our hope is that they'll get support from each other, that they'll learn from experts that we might bring on to teach them and talk with them. They may sign up for a course on a specific topic. The reality is we'll be able to have a greater impact because we hope to involve and invite women all over the world.
The demographic, as you mentioned, are women between what?
Right now, between 25 and 40.
And they're going to be future leaders of their organization?
The hope for some is that they will be, but the other thing they might be aiming for is a very satisfying professional life. And they're finding it within their family's business, and they're taking on some kind of role of responsibility.
What type of advice do you have for parents of those young people so that they can help advise them in their career paths?
Well, I think one thing is to encourage them to have a career. So it really starts there. And the more you can talk about your business and expose your daughter to what you do without pushing it down her throat and be open to giving her choices, I think is most important. Many parents in family businesses are quite clear with their children, sons and daughters, that it's important to work somewhere else first. And if that's not possible or not feasible, or the daughter is absolutely committed and ready to go, then finding ways that the daughter can work for someone else, not for a parent, can perhaps get feedback from outsiders who can really give her excellent advice and suggestions. So it's not only coming from the parent, but it's coming from other employees, or other ways to develop and help her form her career.
How do you help young women who don't want to walk in their parents' shadow? How do you advise them?
Well, in some ways, it would be to advise them to really become the kind of professionals that they have always wanted to be. They may look like their parents and act like their parents, but obviously each one is going to have her own unique style. In some ways, though, for a daughter joining a family business, it's often important for her to develop what I like to call executive presence, so that she's not daddy's girl or mommy's girl or whatever, but she really knows how to carry herself, knows how to talk about the business, and also is comfortable in informing her own judgments and opinions and able to assert them.
So if people want to learn more about Daughters in Charge, maybe see if this is something they'd be interested in, what is your contact information?
We have a website, www.daughtersincharge.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Lori Wellinghoff. Lori is the president of Diggs Real Estate Design and Construction. She's also affiliated with Comey & Shepherd. And Lori, real estate seems to be on the upswing. I'm seeing lots of sold signs all over the place. What are you seeing?
I'm seeing sold before sent, which is industry lingo for houses selling before they ever hit the market. What we're seeing sort of inside the Beltway and even outside the Beltway to a large measure is that we are under inventoried. The buyer demand exceeds the supply. That's a good thing if you're a seller, and it's not a bad thing if you're a buyer either. Typically, under inventoried would lead you to believe that the buyer is held hostage by the lack of choice. And while a buyer does need to be ready to buy, they should not be daunted by the fact that the sellers now hold all of the cards. They do not. The economy did adjust, as we all recall all too well. And while prices have not resumed to the pre-recession highs, they have gone up significantly, in some neighborhoods upwards of 30%, but that is still off of a pretty low. So buyers are still in the catbird seat in terms of it being adjusted pricing, and interest rates are still phenomenal. And I will date myself by letting you know that my first house was purchased with a 14% mortgage. And now 4% is still the norm for a qualified buyer. So prices are right, interest rates are right, but inventories are scarce.
If you are a buyer right now or want to be a buyer, what should you do to prepare so that if you find the house you're looking for, you can make a quick offer?
Well, first of all, one of the things that I find frustrating is that the internet has made a lot of people think that they don't need professionals anymore, and that they're smart as whips and they see everything we see. I am happy for my profession to inform those people that they are incorrect. And that in fact, if you want the best property for you, you need a couple of things. One, you need to be ready because there isn't a lot to choose from. Two, ready means have your pre-qualification letter or proof of funds, be prepared to write an offer, be prepared to be well guided by a real estate agent on what will get you the house but will not leave money on the table. But most importantly, align yourself with a real estate agent. If you know what part of town or what parts of town you want to live in, it's fairly easy using the internet or using your eyes relative to real estate signs to find the preeminent purveyors of real estate agents in those markets. So when you work with a professional, you can lay these things out in terms that are very attractive to the seller, which to your point is that it's not always about the price. You need somebody who can dig deep and find out what are the important points to the seller. For example, a seller may want to live in the house longer. That may be a really important issue that's more important than money. Back to the whole buyers thinking they know everything from the World Wide Web, I always say, you know, if you've got a pain in your side, are you going to go on the internet and figure it out, or are you going to go see a doctor? What I also think is important is real estate agents often know houses that are available for sale, but that are not on the market yet. That's that whole sold before sent vernacular, which means in the areas where I specialize and all productive agents, we know what's coming. We talk to our fellow agents. We are constantly scanning and in touch with and networking the market. And oftentimes I can point you to the best house at the best price before the rest of the world knows it.
So if people listening today would like more information, would like to talk to you, get in touch with you, Lori, what is your contact information?
By email at Lori, L-O-R-I, at digs-home.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Lori Wellinghoff. Lori is the president of Diggs Real Estate Design and construction, and also a real estate agent with Comey and Shepherd. And you seem to have positioned yourself somewhat uniquely in this marketplace because you're not only a real estate agent and you represent buyers and sellers of homes, but through Digs, you actually help people, you know, refurbish, renovate, redesign their homes. What led you into this sort of unique business model?
It was sort of birthed from a pain point of mine personally, which was when you take the real estate process, the construction process, architecture, design, decorating, you become the hub in that wheel. And there's often finger pointing amongst those big silos where, you know, the architect says, hey, not my problem, it was the contractor. And decorator says, not my problem, it was the architect. And real estate agent says, well, I know I told you a new kitchen would be $10,000 when you bought this house. I'm sorry, it was $100,000. I just didn't know. And so what we saw was people were becoming increasingly time-starved. We have over-programmed lives. We travel. We have soccer games until, you know, we can cheer no more. And I wanted to create a place where people could come for everything in one place or anything in one place. So people use us a la carte or in any combination. But a perfect example is when someone with little skill, little time, and little interest wants to start looking for a home. They have a finite budget. Let's just say it's $500,000. And they say, that's the maximum I want to spend. And we go through a list of must-haves and nice-to-haves, trying to get as far into the nice-to-haves as possible. Often we'll look at a home that might be listed for $300,000, but it needs a new kitchen, a new bathroom. It needs some things that are on that must-have list. What's nice about shopping with our firm is that we can help you design and price on the fly everything you need to make that house a home. And so you can consider it in the set of all the homes you've seen, some of which are at your budget, some of which may be far below, but better suited to you.
I think what you said right out the gate about the fact that the way you came up with your business model is because it was a point of pain to you personally.
Right. Well, my biggest pain point was a footer for a foundation at my house poured about 20 feet in the wrong direction. But I was out of town traveling for business. So putting that aside, it was birthed from pain, but it was inspired by trends. So big boxes of services and of goods exist everywhere. You go to Time Warner Cable for your telephone, your internet, your television.
Sure.
You go to Target for everything from a potato to, you know, your prom
shoes.
Dress.
Exactly.
Right. And so the thought that people could throw out their Rolodex, for those of you who still know what a Rolodex is, and have a single source for everything having to do with happy homemaking, it seemed like over a time continuum, we would be a go-to resource in all things.
When you mentioned trends, and one of the trends that your organization's recently developed is this whole idea of multilingual. You've brought on a specialist. Maybe you can talk about that a bit.
Well, we're following the trends that are being set by the Chamber of Commerce here in Cincinnati, which is telling us that by 2020, they wish to have 200,000 new employees in Cincinnati beyond our current base. And that, in fact, they also are angling to ensure that our population becomes more diverse because we're in a global economy and we can't all speak the same language and think the same thoughts.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.